copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Right, the first thing I want to say about economics is I am not an economist. I'm not here to argue economics. I'm also absolutely no use with money whatsoever. But that's not the reason. I'm not here as an economic expert. I'm not here to say the church has the answer to the economic crisis and here is a Christian economic system and this is how it would all work out. I think we need Christian economists as we need Christian everything. But I'm not here addressing you as an expert, and that will soon become abundantly apparent. However, I want to talk about how we use the current economic crisis in what ways we, again, to communicate the gospel. Let me just say, the current economic crisis is, you know, when we ask what went wrong. How, you know, we had a prime minister in Britain who said, as when he was a chancellor of the Exchequer, "I have abolished boom and bust." You know, you talk about hubris. We had people in Wall Street and in London who were saying, "That's it. We're going to have the end of poverty." You know, we're just, and then we have a situation where people were buying houses all over the place, thinking they were going to make lots and lots of money. Everyone was going to make money. Now, it should have been fairly obvious that if you keep getting in debt, at some point someone's going to call in your debt. But for some reason. And in a democratic system, it's very difficult when people will not vote in austerity. What went wrong is that we became incredibly, we overspent. And the money wasn't there. And in particular, what you found is that areas like China were very rich in terms of cash. And areas like the West became very poor to some degree in terms of cash. How much debt? The amount of debt is extraordinary. If you had gone a couple of hundred years ago running at the idea of a balanced economy, never mind a couple of hundred years ago, there's a wonderful American television program called The West Wing. Not everyone likes it because it's uber liberal and stuff, but I love it because it's great acting and brings up some great issues. And that's just, what, 10 years ago? And even in that program, President Bartlet, who would have been the best American president ever if he was real, he talks about having a balanced budget. Nobody would think about having a balanced budget now. When in Britain we talk about reducing the debt, what we mean is we talk about reducing the rate of increase of the debt, not whether we're actually going to get our debt down and gone. The Chinese don't need an army, because if they want to destroy America, all they've got to do is call in their debts. I mean, they blow up the whole world in doing that, but that would be the nuclear option. It really is quite extraordinary how much debt is involved. What it means is that there has been this economic crisis. It's an economic crisis that's felt by governments who are huge spenders. In some instances, United Kingdom, just over 50% of the economy. It means, though, that there will be a trickle-down effect, not of wealth, but of poverty. So if you're in Greece, one of the things you're going to get really angry about is that the guys who are the multimillionaires in Greece, they're not affected by this. All they do is they move their money elsewhere. So the big houses in London, there are houses in London that are not massive houses that are selling for £10 million and are selling to Greeks and to Russian oligarchs. The wealthy will continue. Now, one of the things I would say as a historian, because that is my expertise, not economics, is it's fascinating how this parallels what happened with the fall of the Roman Empire. In the Roman Empire, you had a situation where the culture is a paganized culture. The rich were becoming richer, the poor were becoming poorer. You had a situation in Rome where women were complaining that they were finding it difficult to have enough ass's milk to bathe in whilst there were people outside their doors starving to death. In our culture, we've got a situation where there, in some countries, it's more egalitarian, the Scandinavian countries, and I would argue largely because of an inbuilt Christian heritage. Others would disagree. But in many, many countries, you've got increasing wealth amongst the super rich and increasing poverty amongst the poor. So the most expensive house in the world, costing £100 million, is being built in Mumbai, right beside the slums. Each room has its own helicopter pad or whatever, private swimming pool, and so on. We are creating a culture, which is a materialistic culture, in which the very wealthy, and not even the very wealthy, apparently 10% of people in Britain are now millionaires. They're not really, but that's the value of property that they own, pension, and all that kind of stuff. But an awful lot of people are getting left behind, and economic worries really, really do affect people. If you're happy, Woody Allen said the definition of happiness was one penny in the bank, one penny more salary than you've spent, and the definition of unhappiness was one penny less salary than you've spent. But we've grown in a culture where people will continually spend more. And in fact, the whole of our culture results in people being encouraged to spend more, because it's just assumed that every economy has to grow. The economy only grows if people spend more. So on the one hand, the government gets into debt and it causes the economy to crash, or not just the government, but banks and so on. On the other hand, the way supposed to be out of that debt is for people to spend more. The only way that people can spend more is by themselves getting into debt. And it just becomes a vicious, vicious cycle. To say the result, I think how this came about, inequality and injustice. You will notice in most Western societies, the term equality is now being used of social issues, not of economic issues. I find it intriguing that my left-wing friends, I say to them, you guys gave up on economic justice a long time ago. You now think that equality is whether gay people can marry. It's not equality. What's equality? You know that Karl Marx and Engels in the Communist Manifesto, from each according to his means to each according to his needs, where did they lift that from? Corinthians. Right out of 2 Corinthians, word for word. Now, that's not saying that the Bible is communist, but it is saying that there's a basic principle that you will find a more equitable distribution if you have a society in which there is Christian culture and principles at work. One of the ways I think that this economic crisis has come because of inequality and injustice. You may not be aware of this, but virtually all the savings banks, and I'd be interested, I don't know the figures for the rest of Europe or the world, but virtually all the savings banks in Britain were begun by Christians, and actually particularly clergymen, who wanted to provide an opportunity for the poor to save money, because the other banks were all merchant banks. They were all for capital and so on, and that was fair enough. They weren't arguing that was wrong, but they were saying, look, we've got to have somewhere where the poor can save their money, where it can be safe. And it was all set up, and the money was put into the bank, and the bank could only pay out what the bank had. Now, if bankers operated on that principle nowadays, we'd be far better. But banks are paying out or loaning money that they don't have. They're borrowing money that they don't have. The banks themselves, the saying as safe as banks, is now gone. I'm ashamed, because as a Scotsman, we had a banking system that was the envy of the world, because it was so honest and scrupulous. And if you were a Scottish person, you went to become a bank manager, you'd get it. And yet, two of our banks became two of the biggest banks in the world and became thoroughly corrupt. Totally against the principles of the capitalism of Adam Smith, also another Scotsman. So inequality and injustice were a huge reason involved in this current crisis. Theft and lies. I mean, the amount of stealing in different forms. And tax evasion is theft. When Donald Trump says only fools pay taxes, he's telling me he's not a Christian. That's an outrageous statement for someone who's earning hundreds of millions and billions out of taxes of other people as well. And then says only fools pay taxes. But there has been a lot of theft as well. People stealing from companies and people lying. Again, you need your bank manager to be honest. You need the people who are looking after finance to be honest. I think also power and corruption go together a lot. So I like football, but my personal view is that no Christian should ever support Chelsea Football Club. because of Roman Abramovich. The money that he pours into that club comes from what he has done in Russia. What he's done in Russia is by stealing, by corruption, by the abuse of power, has made billions and billions out of gas and oil, whilst there are people in Russia who are freezing because they don't have enough gas and oil. And that's just immoral and wrong. And you would find, you know, in the Bible, this is not, I'm not teaching politics, but, you know, James talks about weep and wail, you rich people, because you have failed to pay the wages that were due. And when we see how the system works just now, that if you've got money, you can make a lot more money. Now, I'm not arguing against business or against honest businessmen and so on. What I'm arguing against is a system which encourages power and corruption, and in which power and corruption abuses it. Now, how does that all tie in? Well, I'm going to give you some examples of how we've tried to connect this to the Christian gospel and use it, because we don't. I got ill about a year and a half ago. I collapsed, actually, just the weekend before I was due to go to Greece. And I was going to go to Greece and help with the Athens Bible School, but I'd also asked them if I could do this, and they said yes. I wanted to go to the communist quarter in Greece and do a lecture in a cafe there on Christ and the crisis of capitalism. You know, Marx or Jesus? And they thought that was very brave. I really did want to do that, but I wasn't able to do that. But one of our guys designed this when the Cyprus crisis came up. And we put it there as a discussion starter. This is not as an absolute, if you like. In Cyprus, the EU forces the Cypriot state to take 10% from the bank deposits of all its peoples and companies to bail out bankers as a result of their greed. Exodus 20, you shall not steal. By contrast, in Iceland, they let the banks fail, they put the bankers in jail, they protected domestic deposits, started a program of debt forgiveness for its citizens. Economy is booming, Leviticus 25. Very simplistic, and if you're an economist, or you know anything about it, you'll say, ah, but wait a minute, didn't in Iceland this happen, and what about in Greece this? Fine. We just put that as an example of a discussion. Now, our normal posts get 400, 500, 1,000, maybe 2,000 people look at them. Within 24 hours of us putting that online, we had something like 60,000 people had downloaded it. And I started getting emails from Greeks all over the place saying, good for you! And then they started saying, what does this have to do with Christianity, though? And I talked about God of justice and so on and all that kind of stuff. So it was a really, really good connect point. That just kind of illustrates where we were at with all of that, how it went. Norway and Britain. This affected us in Scotland because we're thinking about the oil. And we put that up as a using Genesis 41, the fat cows and the lean cows. What do you do when you have a surplus? You should store it aside. You should put it aside. I think Norwegians are genius, what they've done. And you know, the Norwegian Oil Fund is one of the most successful stock-holding funds in the world. It's run by a Christian who earns a salary, I think, of about £125,000, maybe €150,000. He's been offered salaries. He could command a salary that's 20, 30 times that elsewhere. But he says, why? I heard him being interviewed. I thought it was great. I have a nice house. I have all that I want. I cycle into work in Oslo. So Scandinavian. Brilliant. He says, and he says, I've made Norwegian people very rich. Every Norwegian has £90,000, over €100,000 invested. They have a decent pension and so on. I think that's good Christian principles. The British government, the American government, other governments, we've got to, you know, we spend anything we get, we spend buying popularity but destroying the foundations. You know, those kinds of things. How the church can act in all of this. I want to say one of the things that we can do in this crisis is what we call ministries of mercy. And I'd strongly recommend Tim Keller's book of that same title. We have a Greek lady who has come to work in our city. She's a dentist. She couldn't get any jobs. And one day her husband came home and said his wage had been halved just by the state because he's a teacher. She's had to leave her family and she's come. She managed to get a job in Scotland and she lived with us as a family until she's got her own place. Her husband is going to move over this summer with the kids. He's going to try and get work there. But what they're going to do is they want to send money back to Greece to help the poor Christians who don't have the advantage that they have of having professional jobs, which they can use elsewhere. What do you do if you're a church in that situation? In Britain, there's a Christian charity called CAP, Christians Against Poverty. One of my friends helps run it. They're opening food banks, giving out food free to people. They're opening two new ones every single week. There's something like 700,000 people in Britain who are living by having food donated to them. It's insane. But in Britain, virtually all the food banks and all that kind of ministry has been done by churches. And it's an incredibly powerful witness. Remember the poor. I think that is really, really, really vital and really important. And don't patronize. You know, it's not just about handouts and all that kind of stuff. It's what's the best way that you can help with the poor. I'm dealing with a lady just now. And she's living off state welfare, which for her to get a job, she'd need to earn £25,000 a year. She's not worked for 30 years. She's not going to get that. But I'm teaching her about the dignity of work. And it doesn't matter the money that you're getting. It's responsibility. Salt and light. We as Christians are to be salt and light in the culture that we live in. I do think the early Christians were known by their attitude to the poor. It's an incredible apologetic. We used to think, I think, in a lot of churches in the West, that remembering the poor was about giving money to a missionary organization and going to help starving kids in Africa. Whether that was ever a good idea, certainly helping materially is a really good idea. But I think the need is also very directly around our own areas. And we need to think of ways that we can do that. We probably have to do it collectively as churches rather than as an individual. But even in individual churches, what hope do the poor have except the gospel? And do you know this? Poorer people are far more likely to know that than wealthier people. I've done door-to-door work in a middle-class housing estate, and everyone said, oh, no, I'm not interested. And actually, most of them said they belonged to a church, but they weren't Christians. And I don't need God. But when I knocked on the doors, people in the poorer housing area, people didn't deny a need. They may have denied the solution. They may have not been interested in the solution. But they certainly saw a need there. Christians Against Poverty, I mentioned them just to conclude. Again, Christians Against Poverty is, believe it or not, it's an evangelistic organization. I know one church in Edinburgh, Morningside Baptist, that have seen over 200 people profess faith because of the work they do through Christians Against Poverty. And it's really debt counseling is primarily what they do. The Trussell Trust, sorry, I made a mistake earlier. The one I was mentioning that gives out the food parcels is called the Trussell Trust. Christians Against Poverty does debt counseling. I've used them personally. As I said, I'm not all that great with money. They do a money program for churches where they teach members in the church how to use their money. One basic principle, don't use credit cards, pay cash. You don't get into debt if you pay cash. How we've done that personally, my wife and I, there's a really, really nice restaurant we like to go to. It's very expensive. So what we do is each of us puts aside £5 in cash in a jar if you ever want to break into our house. Don't do it just after we've been at the restaurant. Give us a few weeks, you'll be something there. We put it into the jar. We save up the money. If we can wait, we go to the really nice restaurant. When we go to the restaurant, it is so lovely to open your wallet, pull out the cash, plonk it on the counter, and walk away with no credit card debt, having had a great night. And I think that's a principle that we can teach people. So there's a lot that we can do. And a lot that we can use, and I think people again just see that the church is concerned about where they're at, and people are concerned about money. And we need to show and exemplify how we can live as Christians with money.